Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home. I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. If you want extensive discussion from longtime fans of Avatar, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Sam.
Hi.
Britt.
Hello.
And Jeff.
Howdy.
Today we'll be discussing the latest episode of Korra, Civil Wars Part 1. Hooray, it aired tonight. Separate from Part 2, which will be airing next week because Nick is dumb and didn't air them together. If this is your first time listening, we are a Avatar and Korra podcast for both big and casual fans of the show. We podcasts are up by midnight on Fridays. You can email us at dylan@dongbufang.net, go to the forums at dongbufang.net/forums to discuss this episode and this podcast. The podcast website is dongbufang.net/podcast, our Tumblr is dongbufang.tumblr.com, and our Twitter is at dongbufang, no spaces for any of those. And there'll be more info on how to contact us at the end. Today we'll be going over some Korra news. We'll discuss the episode, obviously, critically and from a fan perspective. Then we'll be giving theories on what we think will happen this season. Specifically, Jeff has a new theory. And if you listen to us
last theory.
Yeah, this is the Jeff theory number two. If you listen to us last season, Jeff correctly predicted the identity of Amon after episode 9, so he has a good track record. And I also have a theory which I will be re-presenting. I do not have as good of a track record with the theory, but I will say it. And we will answer
He starts it out with, I'm 75% this is correct.
And then it goes downhill.
I did do that. Anyway, then you can, and we'll be answering your emails and voicemails, specifically one of each, but that's okay. So, news to go over. We have new episode titles, specifically, if you weren't aware, the next episode will be Civil Wars Part 2, then we'll get Peacekeepers, after that we'll get, I honestly forgot.
Oh, okay.
It's, The Sting.
The Sting.
Okay.
Wow,
that's really vague.
Everything.
Yeah, The Sting is very vague. Then we will get both episodes of Beginnings, which is about Avatar 1, airing in separate weeks, again, because Nickelodeon sucks. And that's all we know for now. Those go through the end of October. This puts us on pace for the finale airing on Thanksgiving weekend, which I think they won't do, so we'll probably get the Korra finale the first week of December.
That's when the Avatar finales were, so...
Yeah, not all of them, but at least one of them aired that exact week.
The first season finale
the
aired
The second
that week.
Season, yeah. Too. Like, aired, like,
how do you guys
the,
remember
yeah,
this?
I don't know, but I
have
know
the best
that's
memory.
What, yeah, exactly. I know that's what happened.
The premiere ratings are in, and of course I have my internet browser closed. I'm going to do this by memory. It got Korra, the premiere got 2.6 million viewers and a 0.8 adults 18 to 49 rating. This 2.6 is lower than any episode Korra got during book one and is lower than maybe a third of the episodes of the original series. All ratings must be looked at in context, though, and Nickelodeon ratings are down across the board. The SpongeBob episode that aired before Korra last week is a repeat, got better numbers than it. but that's kind of true. The Sam and Cat episode on Saturday did worse than it. Nickelodeon ratings are down. This Korra rating is good relative to the other ones, and its adult rating is good, but Nick doesn't really care about that.
You know, no one really goes to watch watch SpongeBob. Like, oh, man, SpongeBob's on. Let's go watch it. It's like, kids, go melt your brains. Watch SpongeBob.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
Put it only in the back.
I mean, honestly, Nickelodeon's ratings are becoming very dependent on SpongeBob, which is probably a problem. Which is a problem once SpongeBob stops. There will have nothing.
SpongeBob is never going to stop.
Why would they ever kill that?
I don't know. I've seen stuff. I don't know. It's been going on for so long. Nickelodeon shows usually only last 50 episodes ish. SpongeBob has been going like
for 10 years.
Over 10 years, yeah.
It's have you even crazy. Watched the years. Recent episode, Dylan? They I mean, clearly do not care.
Only before Korra, yeah. It doesn't seem that good. The last thing, today there was a review came out of The Search Part 3. It contains a plot summary of the entire comic. I don't know why they would do that, but it does. So if you want to be spoiled on what happened to Ursa, you can check out that link on our Twitter and Tumblr.
When does it even come out?
Am I allowed to say that?
No, you can't say that. I mean, obviously you think it's going to be stupid. Like, that's not even a spoiler. And you learn the fate of the Dylan theory in this. I'm not going to say what
it is. I don't even remember what the Dylan theory was.
Did we even talk about it, or is that just...
No, we discussed it on the podcast in depth. So, yeah.
I remember this, but I don't remember what it was. So
when does the search actually come out?
October 30th.
Oh.
Ooh, Halloween.
Right. That's like a month. Why did they review it like a month away?
I don't know. I'm sure.
I don't know. They put the whole plot in there. So.
Yeah. So now we know. That's great. We'll discuss when it actually comes out. You know, or if it leaks online, maybe we'll discuss it before. We'll see.
No,
so that's all. Oh, I guess there's. We'll mention this later. But Brian did a post on Tumblr explaining some of how the governments work in the new age of the Avatar world, fake 1920s, including that the Earth Kingdom now has a queen, and he explained what we kind of get in this episode, that Unalaq is actually chief of both tribes, which we didn't really know.
Just dumb.
Dumb.
You know, it's all dumb.
Just assume we know that stuff. Yeah, that's great.
It's really stupid. We'll discuss- and Katara is the president of waterbending.
I mean, no, that's not what he said.
Yes, yes.
We determined that last season when she was allowed to make a waterbend that bloodbending illegal. We're like, well, I guess she's just the president of waterbending.
That is not an official title.
I mean,
title.
Do you mess with Katara? No.
We now know they have presidents.
NYCC at all?
Oh, yeah, they're Brian and Joaquin are coming to New York Comic Con. I forget when it is, but it's in...
Spoilers, New York is actually terrible.
Oh, okay, we're not even going there. But yeah, it's next month or something. It's not really relevant as news, because it's sold out already. It's like, you can't go. Great, you heard about that, now you can't go. We'll cover if they reveal anything.
That's what I hate about Comic Con. You never know who's going to be there until it's sold out.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying. Okay, so let us discuss the episode now. It's Civil War is Part 1, written by Mike and directed by Colin Hook. I think he directed the first episode of the... I assume he'll just be rotating with Ian Graham in directing episodes. And it seems like Mike will just be on a rotation in terms of who gets credited for the writing with the two other writers. For this is part one of a... This is pretty clearly part one of a two-part arc. That being said, we will treat it as its own episode and don't like be any less harsh on it or the other way around, because we're only getting half of it. It's Avatar episodes really stand on their own in terms of part one or part two. Give me your initial thoughts about the episode, what you liked about it, what you didn't like, what you thought of it overall. Let's start with Mel.
I am still not sure how to feel about it, just because, I mean, I guess the biggest reaction I get when you ask that is negative, just because the pacing was ridiculous and so much happened in the span of like 25 minutes. Well, 25 minutes for us, obviously not 25 minutes for them. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was just, it's a lot to absorb in a very short amount of time. And I'm not sure how I feel about the whole situation with, the three idiots that they're no longer allowed to be called the Cloud Babies because they're being stupid. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, there's a lot. I mean, I think because so much happened, it's hard for me to process any one thing or look at any character development. So, right, I mean, I'll probably get a better handle on it as we go through it. But right now, I'm just kind of,
okay.
In response.
Okay. Jeff, what did you think?
Out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, well, no, we're not.
Out of 10.
Jeff, what did you think?
Like Mel, not a fan of the pacing. It really jumped around, and like the comedic timing was all off in one of these scenes with the grandkids. I am very happy that Korra is not angry at her dad anymore. That's good news. The bending was cool in this one, and I liked how Korra conducted herself in that scene. So, yeah. That's
great. Yeah. So we still don't know what we think. Okay, we'll get there by the end. Sam, what do you think?
I thought it was okay. I don't know. It's just, it was a thing that was on, and I watched it.
Yeah, that is accurate, yes.
I don't know. It's just, it felt like something rather like kill time rather than something I got really into.
Okay, that's interesting.
So, that's how I felt.
Okay. Britt, what did you think?
I actually liked this episode, and I was really meh on the first episode. Like, I barely paid attention because it was boring, but, like, I actually felt that the pacing in this episode was a little better. Still not, like, super, but better. The animation didn't screw me over as much this time. Like, I felt that it didn't look as weird. Maybe I've gotten used to it, but I felt like it was more together. I don't know how best to explain that. I'm not an animation person, but it was less. The faces didn't do as many screwy things. The plot interested me more. Like, the things that happened, I felt more ingrained in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was better than episode one, but it still was not a good episode, so.
Okay.
It gets, like, a 5.3.
No grading yet.
I can't grade.
Not yet.
I give it an average out of 10.
Okay, we will grade at the end of the episode discussion. I agree with Britt that I didn't notice any glaring animation bad things. Any animation faults. Like, they might have been there, I just didn't notice them. It seemed animated better. I don't really know what pacing means anymore. We use this word so much. I'm not going to say that there are pacing issues. I didn't think this was a great episode overall. I'm not sure whether it was just not good or only somewhat good. I think the problem is that the episode focused on two things, which one of which I didn't care about and one of which angered me. So that's not a good place to start. They don't care about the conflict between the North and the South. We haven't been in this world for so many years. It's not really relevant. We don't know what's been going on. And all of this conflict is very general. It's just super general civil war-ish stuff, and it's not super interesting to me, especially because it's also focused on characters we just got introduced to a few episodes ago. The second plot is one is also based on new characters, and two new characters and one character we don't really care that much about, and it just goes in a direction that angers me because it tarnishes the reputation of my favorite character from or second favorite or whatever from the original series. So I don't know if it was well executed or not. Certainly the writing wasn't incredible because it was all just very general. And I think there's a lot of humor in the beginning, some of which does hit, and then it just falls off in the end. So I guess maybe in terms of pacing, that could be, maybe that's what that means. But yeah,
here's an example of pacing that I had a problem with. It's like when they're out to dinner with Bull and Ernest and all them, and then we cut to Cloud Babies, then we cut back and Cord is running into her house. Like, what? How did they get from A to B? That's
okay. I guess I didn't have a problem with that then. I didn't really care. I do see that how that could be how that's not. I don't know if that's what pacing refers to.
That's what I mean.
Happens. I mean, what else do you need to know?
Yeah, I guess. So we'll develop our opinions more as we go through the episode. Let's start by just going over generally. The A plot of the episode was that Unalaq is now occupying the South, the Southern Water Tribe, and the South's reaction to that and how Korra reacts as the Avatar. The B plot is conflict among the Kadang kids.
Also, Iki is missing.
The three idiots.
I don't think that's actually the... I thought about this for a little bit. What would I actually classify the B plot as? Iki is missing? No, that's just a vehicle to explore.
Yeah, nobody cares about Iki. Yeah,
that she's gone.
It's really... Yeah, that is really upsetting, because it's not like...
Like, I think they actually literally stopped caring that she was gone and just became so self-absorbed in their own little squabble.
Iki is, like, the one... Maybe the one of the three grandchildren you're, like, maybe most attached to. I mean, certainly, she's not everyone's favorite, but she's the one that talks the most.
She's the, like, funniest.
Yeah.
I love them all, but...
Northern troops are here, and they freeze... They don't exactly, like, have a blockade, but it seems to block the shipping routes. But it wasn't even that big of an ice wall that they put up.
Just like, meh.
Yeah. That's how I just kind of...
Can't get your rotting halibut. Was it halibut?
Yeah, it was halibut, yeah.
Your halibut through.
Yeah.
Seriously, I need someone to buy these fish.
Yeah, like, what even is the point of that? I don't get it.
I don't know. It wasn't done well.
What's the word?
Lockdown?
They can't leave.
No, there's a word for it. Embargo. No. Well, yes. Well, kind of. I mean, that is one thing that's happening, though. I mean, Barrick mentioned that he can't sell his stuff.
This is true. I mean, it's not. It's presented at the beginning of the episode, then not expanded on until later, I guess.
Well, Varric's
so I guess they're just trying to keep Barrick there.
Yeah, Varric's the one who brings up that it's the economy that's...
Varric seems to be like a major player in all this, but we don't really know. We barely even knew that he was from the South, and
well,
suddenly
yeah, because
he's sticking
when,
up for the South.
When he was at the little tribal meeting, I was like, who are you? Why? Yeah. Do you live here?
Yeah, we didn't even know he lived there. Yeah. It's not really just explained well, his role in all this. He seems to be maybe the most important figure, it turns out.
There is not enough exposition for this series so far, and we are in episode 2, and I can say that, and that's seriously going to be a problem. We have no idea who these people are. We barely know them.
We're on episode 3, but yes.
You know what? First 1 and 2 were aired together.
No,
so...
they were not together. They were separate
episodes.
They weren't? No.
They were aired together.
They were separate episodes.
That's what I meant.
Yes. Second week, you could say that.
Yeah, we're in the second week, and I can feel this problem.
This is something we'll go over, but they're definitely thrusting plot out there without really much explanation several times, at the expense, I think, of the storytelling in the show. Unalaq meets with Korra and tells her about the Northern Portal, so we're starting to expand on that.
I really don't care.
Yeah, I don't really care about the portals either.
They seem kind of dumb.
They do seem kind of dumb.
They do.
They're obviously going to be significant later in the season.
But the entire portal plot, like, we saw the entire first portal in the span of, like, 5 minutes. Was the scene even that long?
It was about five minutes.
You know, she goes in there and she fights, and that's supposed to be, like, a huge turning plot point for her. It happens in 5 minutes.
I don't know if it was supposed to be huge, but yeah, that scene wasn't done well. It certainly is going to weaken the portal stuff later. It's very general explanations. There's this portal. It's going to open this portal. I think it's supposed to be general. I think there's going to be like a twist when it happens later. But for now, it's not working. So we get our first glimpse of the B plot. Bumi and Kaya did not go on vacations with Aang and Tenzin. This is going to be a big discussion point. This might dominate the discussion today. They went to Kyoshi Island to ride the elephant koi, and Ember Island to make sand palaces, says Tenzin.
They said sand palaces. I'm like, Tenzin. What?
So you said palaces, I believe.
They made, like, sand castles.
No, I thought you said sand palaces, like me.
Oh, palaces for Sam, that's good too. So, they, here's the problem with this. As the main discussion point here is that Aang is being brought up in a negative light by Kaya and Bumi, and this is probably a first time for Avatar Corps. I think obviously, as big fans of Avatar, we're gonna have a negative reaction to this. Mel, what was you? This clip was released earlier in the week. What was your initial reaction when you saw the clip, and how have your feelings changed now that you've seen the episode?
Well, I felt like Aang probably has his reasons, but I don't know if they'll be any good.
Don't stop laughing.
No, I said Mel, but yeah, Mel,
I know he said.
It?
I know he said that.
I apologize.
No, I thank you for not having us just have a 5 seconds of no talking, Jeff. But yeah, that is Jeff, not Mel.
What was your question?
Okay, you were gone. This tarnishing of Aang's reputation. Yes. This clip was released earlier in the week. How did you react to the clip, and how has this changed since you've seen the episode?
I mean, I guessed it was going to happen when they said that, when they put up, you know, that. The character bios where they said Kaya was closer to her mother than her Avatar father, and I thought that's really weird that they said Avatar father, and I'm like, I bet you there's an issue there, and it turned out there really was an issue. And then, you know, we get this clip where it's like, all right, well, she's mad because Tenzin got a lot of attention, and then you get farther into the episode and it's about more than just Tenzin getting attention. I mean, she clearly thinks Aang completely neglected her, and Bumi, you know, she points out that it's more than just about passing on airbending, and, you know, it's he had to do his responsibility to the world and saving the world and all that, and she clearly just had a major issue with it, more so than Bumi. He seems to have an overall issue with the fact that his two siblings who can bend think they're hot stuff, and he's not. But I mean, I kind of guessed it was going to happen, but the farther we got in the episode after the clip, the more sort of vitriolic her response seemed mm-hmm. to Aang. Like, she seemed really angry.
Angry.
I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect.
She's pretty angry.
Yes, Jeff?
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, on the one hand...
You got all the...
Okay, no, please stop. Jeff, yes, keep going.
Okay, so Bumi is like, he seems like he's infantilized a little. Or I don't know how you pronounce that word. Infantized? Infantilized?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. I know what you're trying to say.
Yeah, that. So, like, he's not very mature. But he's the one that went into the military, so you'd think he'd be, you know, all mature and, like, responsible and all that. So, like, how did this happen to him? I don't know.
I mean, he seems to be serious when he's actually being Mr. Commander, and when he's, you know, really? With his siblings, he runs around in his underwear, apparently.
He was kind of jokey the entire episode, even.
Yeah, I've never even seen him serious, but...
I mean, he did that you know, that Commander Bumi reporting for duty thing.
Yeah, I should say that I liked Bumi's voice actor a lot more in this episode. He actually showed depth and range, yeah.
Yeah.
Unlike Kaya's.
We really have not seen Kaya talk that much, I don't think.
And Tenzin. Did.
Well, JK continues to not be not show any range in his.
Yeah, and once again, it doesn't sound like JK Simmons anymore.
I don't. I mean, you can't just accuse someone of not sounding like him.
No, but I.
Yes, you can. Because
it wasn't even me.
Like
it was like,
he doesn't sound like JK Simmons playing Tenzin. Does that make sense?
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's like he's improved.
No, but I don't know. It's just. I guess it's just because it's different from last season. It's
getting back to the topic at hand.
Wait, hold on. I want to bring up Mel's pun.
No way! Really, that's
how much I hate her.
Kai is mad because he got all the attention.
Okay, so Mel made this pun earlier.
So much.
That's great.
Ha ha ha!
Thank you for that.
Mel
is angry.
Okay,
she's
done with this.
You're the worst. Yo,
I actually have like a point to make.
Yeah, Britt, let's talk about serious stuff. Yes.
Okay, actually, some point. What I do think happened, being a child of three. In being the oldest child of three. Anyways, is that because the other two children teased Tenzin senselessly, like, I really do think they teased him absolutely, like, horrifically as a child. If they do treat them, like, this way as an adult still, the way they... Because, you know, when you have a sibling relationship, as you get older, your relationship mellows out. If this is the mellowed out version of their childhood relationship, Tenzin had it terribly. So I think Aang took him places to make him feel like he was still special and loved as a child because of the way his siblings treated him, and that's why he went on all those vacations, because Aang couldn't spend a whole lot of time at home trying to protect him and, like, grow him into a person as much.
You think it's like a feedback loop, then?
I think it's like a feedback loop. He was, you know, that's why he was trying to protect him from the home situation.
Okay, so like, we could speculate on what the problem is. I don't know if this is the issue at hand, though, speculating on what really happened. I think we should maybe focus on more of the what happens in the episode specifically. Like,
yeah, but the reasons behind what happens we haven't seen yet are what happens in the episode.
I mean, I don't know if you can take that away from. Oh, I guess what I'm saying is you can. That's like good. Maybe that is what happened, but I don't think that the episode hints at that. I think okay. that, like, if we're yeah, it's like we're strictly evaluating this, but we will. I guess we'll get back to this though later on. My thing was, why are they focusing on this? Why are they focusing on Bumi and Kaya's relationship with Aang in terms of this B-plot? I guess there's a few reasons you can think of. One, the most obvious one would be this, they're trying to develop Bumi and Kaya's characters, especially in relation to Tenzin. And this seems to be the best way to do it, bringing up their past. It also resonates an emotional response with the audience because we've seen the original series. Although this is a weird way to do it, because it gives us the opposite response than what you would think. It, like, provokes anger from us instead of like.
Well, I think people need to let go of the, especially you. Like, I understand that he's your favorite character, but that doesn't mean he can't be flawed either. And I'm not saying he did everything that Kaya and Bumi said, that he was completely neglectful towards them and like Tenzin. But, you know, there is a possibility that he was not the world's number one father. So he never actually had a proper parent figure himself. I mean, he had Gyatso, but that was his guardian and his mentor. It wasn't his father.
Yes, so it would make sense if Aang was an amazing father, but that's not even the point here. I'm not, like, arguing, like, oh, why are you...
Maybe Avatar just shouldn't have kids, except he had to have kids because airbending.
Yeah.
Roku so, had kids, and it seemed pretty fine.
So, like, why... My point, I guess, is not, like, that, oh, why is it... Why are you making Aang not seem perfect? It's that, why would you bring this up? Like, this is just... It's, like, I think the average fan watching this isn't going to say, oh, this makes me think interesting things about this character that I loved, and maybe this is what he did afterwards. It's going to be... Oh, this doesn't make me happy. I remember Aang fondly.
No, we knew Aang.
I mean, I'm one of those people who thinks that they were full of crap and he is going to be showing up this season when they, they were...
Okay, it's the preview of our discussion later, yes.
Yeah, so I feel like this isn't going to be the last word. Like, I don't think we're not going to get here Aang's side of the story, because both Tenzin and then Kai and Bumi's version are both sort of unreliable narrators. I mean, they're both skewed one way or another.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I guess that brings me to the second possible reason as to why they're bringing this up now. Because it's not just like, oh, they mention it. They haven't devoted an entire B-plot out of the episode to this. Is that they're setting this up for some arc later in the season. Maybe involving Aang, maybe not involving Aang. But this is going to be relevant later, I would say.
Yes. I mean, I think it's... I don't want it to be a plot point for Kai and Bumi, but I think it is definitely a huge part of their story is sort of this daddy issues.
Yeah. I think this is maybe a theme we'll see throughout this, and we saw last week, is sacrificing the beginning of the season, like, an expense of later season. Like, they seem to be trying to set stuff up too much. The same thing with the portal last week. That scene kind of was terrible in the episode, but it's going to be relevant later.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, is maybe the same thing. Although, I don't think this was terrible. I just don't think it was amazing. Let's move on and we can get back to this. Iki's missing, although that doesn't matter to anyone.
Nobody cares.
The kids...
This was where the comedic timing was just really weird. Like, mm-hmm. Really awkward pauses all over the place.
Okay, I see. They're joking. I thought the Bumi shark squid stuff was actually, yeah. was actually
that was
really
good.
Funny.
That was yeah. good. I liked that.
Is the shark squid real?
No.
See, it's unclear whether Bumi is, like, playing along.
Is he, like, and no one responded to what he said, so I'm like, is he serious, or...
It seems like Bumi's crazy and is also playing along with the child.
I didn't get that. I got that there's actually a problem. There's actually a shark squid.
That's what you took out of this, okay. And another relevant thing from the scene is that the children are fighting, which we saw last episode, Iki and Jinora butting heads, but it seemed more just kid stuff. This seems more serious. Which is interesting.
Yeah, why are they picking on Iki? What'd she do?
She's
the middle never hook up.
She's annoying.
Yeah, I mean. No other comments? Okay.
No.
Iki was all.
Great. Of note is that we do not see the resolution to the Jinora stuff last episode. We thought there'd be a cliffhanger. Instead, it is I don't even know how to describe this. Since it is not resolved in this episode, even if it comes up later, I would say that means that those scenes were bad in the last episode.
It's like a hanging plot point.
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense, though. Like, why aren't we seeing what happened?
Well, that was obviously Avatar Wan's statue.
So I've seen stuff... Well, that post you linked to...
Yeah.
Disagree with that. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, she
Wait,
knew...
Wait, what?
It was... No, they were pointing out that it was an Avatar. It's just... The whatever that statue, the markings
it has
on that
more
statue,
significance than
yeah,
Star Wars.
It has
yeah,
something
okay.
to do with which I guess would tie these seemingly unconnected plots together. Is that Avatar Wan and Jinora's deal has something to do with what Unalaq's doing?
Let's actually like mention what it says.
Yeah, sure.
Oh,
it has the statue has the stuff around it, which is similar to the stuff that's around the spirits when they're being placated.
The stuff.
Those, like, swirly line. Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
And the markings on the top of the statue match the markings sort of on the head of a lot of the spirits.
I didn't
the eyes.
I noticed that.
That's pointed out in the post, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so we will see if that has significance. Now we see... I like this... Okay, so I guess my two favorite scenes of the episode are the one with the shark squid, that whole scene. Even though it's awkward, I agree. It has some of the funniest lines. And then we see the Varric scene. I think Varric's characterization in the scene is really interesting, because last time we see him as this complete wacky figure who's not serious at all. And then we see him being that same figure, but while also being very, very serious and involved in the plot. And I think this
character... He came across as devious.
Him
turning evil.
Yeah, evil. He came across pretty devious this episode.
It makes me sad. I don't want him to be evil.
I still think he's very interesting. And the rhetorical question stuff I thought was still very funny. But then
I hate the solid fish.
Yeah, well, that too. And then at the end, also excellent voice work from John Michael Higgins. Like, I think he's definitely been the best addition so far.
The best.
Yeah. I think that we are seeing some interesting characterization of leadership in this episode, because we know that Bumi was the commander, and he's very silly, but we know he commanded legions of men, you know, in the army for decades. Mm-hmm. And we see Varric, who is also very silly, stepping up to the plate. So it's sort of like an odd place of leadership. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's a nice...
to be leaders, but they are.
Yeah, that's a really nice point. I didn't see that connection. It's like, yeah, and at the same time, we see Tonrak and Unalaq kind of as leaders, but Tonrak is kind of eclipsed by Varric in terms of leadership for the South. I wonder if that'll be, if that was like intentional, whether that be more of a theme. But I guess we'll get back to Varric, as this is really the only scene where we see him act so much, and then we see him mentioned later. Okay, here's another big discussion point. So we see, hopefully, maybe the end of Bolesca. I don't know.
That crushed and burned pretty quick.
Yeah, that was pretty fast. Icy Bliss, as she says.
Those laughs, like...
I don't know. They were, like, funny, but, like...
What are these two?
I don't even know.
No. No.
Sounded like Squidward.
That was not laughter. That was, like...
I want to be in the room. I want to be in the room with Andrea Romano directing the
Aubrey Plaza
during this scene. Yeah,
I just want to be near Aubrey Plaza all
just
the time.
Just in general, yeah.
Yeah.
Mako.
Mako.
Okay, so
was awesome.
Mako.
Okay, let's divide this in half. First, let's talk about Bolesca.
It's abusive.
Plug for the DF forums here. Dogwufang.net/forums. You can post on the podcast thread. And on last week's podcast thread, Ty, longtime DF member, brought up that he thought that Bolesca shouldn't be seen as funny. We should be looking out for Bolin because this is an abusive relationship.
Yeah, now I look out for Bolin because Bolin expressed his unhappiness.
Yeah, so last episode, I don't think that was too much of a valid point because Bolin never seems unhappy. He never had a willingness to like get out of this. But now
good foresight.
Yeah, well, yeah, Ty seemingly anticipated this. Now, certainly, that is a valid opinion. I mean, I think it was last episode, too, but it's even more so now. Bolin wants to break up with her, or he doesn't even consider that at first. I've seen this plot point in so many other shows. It's like, oh, I can break up with her. That's a thing. Like, I swear I've seen that in so many sitcoms.
Everyone was disagreeing, so I figured I'd jump in.
It becomes adorable to all. That's how I'd describe it. How has your opinion of Bolesca changed?
It's been 3 episodes.
I mean, I was excited, and now I'm like, it's one of those deals.
I mean, this is one of the things of the episode. This entire episode was really deflating, I would say. This is a big reason why. Came in shipping Bolesca, and...
There's some sort of pun in there about deflating.
Deflating, Bolesca. I see, yes. Deflating.
But I don't know quite what it is.
Well, it's like Bolin deflate me last episode, you know?
Yeah. He deflated him.
That was not intentional. just a lot of... I guess why... I mean, I probably don't sound excited either, this podcast. A lot of stuff happened that is just not... is like not only is not exciting, but counteracts previous excitement that we had from either series.
I just want Bolin to be happy.
I just want to punch Mako in the face.
Okay, let's get to that. Too. Let's get to that now. Mako giving relationship advice. He says,
"No,
relationships are like blood sucking leeches." And
you just got to rip them off.
You just got to rip them off. Yeah. So
you call Asami basically a bloodsucking leech.
So I would say that Mako is
Like,
gets the
talking?
Award for best relationship advice of the year.
He didn't even break up with Asami.
Yeah. Like
no, he's on.
What are you talking about?
Mako. Mugger
you have no right.
Bullen to break up. And that's the biggest flaw he had last season. Like, what are they writing here?
And then he makes fun of him. He's like, oh, you didn't rip the leech off. You kind of tugged at it. I'm like, well, what did you do?
Yeah, it was the exact
You just thing. Kind of ignored the leech and let it wither and die.
Oh, my God.
It left it to wither and die until it fell off.
You know, if Josh or Tim were writing this episode, I mean, I should say that I think this season we should treat episode writing credits kind of as not true, because I feel like they're probably all collaborating more so than normal, because there's only three of them. But yeah, like, if it's a new person writing this, ignoring last season, you can see this as being fine. But Mike writing this, having written what Mako did last season, how does this make any sense?
It's just so dumb.
Okay, I have, like, a little rant going with characterization of the last, like, three episodes, because he literally jumps around, and they made him into a completely different person, like, episode one and two. I was really confused, and he was very, like, lackluster. And then they cut up the things that made Mako himself, and in some ways just made him enjoyable, that he was kind of just angry and that he was very cynical. You know, those were at least interesting to watch, like the scene from season one where he burns the parking tickets. It's one of my favorite, like, moments in the whole season one, because it's just funny and irate, and they don't pretend that it's okay. Like, that's Mako, and I kind of liked that. But now he's, like, become a softie, but we never really saw the transition.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, who is he?
I certainly think his characterization has changed. I don't know if he's, like, a different character. Like, I still see this as Mako.
Yeah. Yeah, I
still think Mako. This is 100% something Mako.
Yeah.
Well, this scene is different.
Mean, though?
Yeah.
He's, like, he's changed.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, Britt. I think they're definitely writing him differently, probably because of how ineffective he was in season one.
I just can't believe that they made him, like, oh my God.
So, okay, there is a point here. If you ignore last season, what Mako did last season, it's not like anything he's saying is bad advice.
Yeah, but then last season happened.
Yes. He didn't even do all the things he said he did.
Like, his advice to Bullen's pretty
and
good.
And his advice is really, like, a matter of fact. Like, this is something I should have done. It was like, hey, this is something I did do, but yeah, he didn't at all.
Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah, he acts like he's got past experience.
At the same time, I feel like this is actually probably pretty accurate on how Mako would handle it. He wouldn't, like, admit a past fault. He would just see himself as having done this, even, like, not even...
Oh, so I totally just broke up with Asami.
Yeah, so I guess it's...
It was completely obvious.
Maybe it's accurate characterization, but it's infuriating, so please don't do that. Okay, so...
I gotta say, like, my favorite line in this whole episode is right here, when Bolin is like, oh, Cord better watch out.
Yeah, like, you get him, Bolin.
Poor freak, Bolin. Poor freak.
Oh, goodness. I guess that's one of the only candidates for the quote lodge. I don't think anything.
No, I was telling Dylan they released, like, a Soft Bowl and Says clip.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, and I told Dylan just rip that whole thing.
Other
just,
than
like,
the meeting Eska and Desna scene.
Just put like Eska's laugh and.
Yeah, exactly.
Ha, ha, ha.
The quote lodge refers to that thing in the beginning of the episode I play where you hear quotes from people. I changed it last week. There's Eska stuff. Cool. Anyway.
No, we're going to have to get rid of that now.
Yeah, well, we're going to get at least one of them has background noise and stuff, and it's not good. But the rest, I think, are cool, good lines. Unalaq is sitting in the palace like a creep. Oh, first of all, there's... You said this. I didn't even say it. First of all, the Southern Water Tribe has, like, this giant palace we've never seen before. It's gorgeous. Yes, so you're laughing yourself. I see. So we see this giant palace. Reactions to who built this? Like,
I don't know.
Just Fred just waterbended it.
I guess you can just waterbend
He's
giant
the
buildings.
President of waterbending.
Yeah, you know, the president of waterbending did this.
They probably built it for him so, like, when he comes and visits, you can have a place to
yeah, I guess
to be creepy.
I guess, yeah. So
creepy.
Yeah, complete with that, like, slanted shadow above
so
his
weird,
face.
He was freaking sitting in there by himself with, like, a weird shadow on, like, the upper part of his body with his eyes closed. Like, who... What?
Well, you know, if his eyes were open, I would have had a problem with that. But since his eyes are closed, he's like, oh, he's meditating or, like, communing
just
with the spirit.
Just take a nap on the throne in the dark.
Yeah, something.
So
he was probably like, oh, the sun's in my eyes. I'll just waterbend the shadow in place.
My biggest problem with this is I think we mentioned it, but they're assuming we know that Unalaq is the chief of both tribes, and we don't know that.
I thought Tonarok was the chief of the South for the longest time.
It was brought up because people were wondering why Katara wasn't in charge in the South. And then he was like, well, no, the South doesn't even have its own chief. It's under the North's dominion.
I wonder if that's how it's
when did that happen? Because Hakoda was Katara's father.
What happened?
They changed the rules and they didn't tell us. That's
really dumb.
What is?
Well, no, so I think Sam could be right in that it's always been that way. Especially if this portal thing is actually true, then they could have actually been one tribe. But when the war happens, the portal breaks, and then Hakoda steps up and bees the chief.
Yeah. Maybe.
It's always been that way, isn't like...
Maybe.
Like, I understand what you're saying, but, like, in terms of an excuse, it wasn't that way in Avatar. Like, they never said
Well,
that.
No, but, yeah. because... Well, like, Unalaq said, if he's telling the truth, he said, like, the war, you know, brought the world out of balance and the spirit...
Yeah, no, I know. I understand what you're saying. Like, in terms of the chronology of the Avatar world, but I'm saying in terms of when they made stuff up, like Mike and Brian, when they sat down and said, this is how it's going to work. If they thought of that while they're making the original series, they never communicated it to us.
I doubt they thought of it.
Yeah, I think this is a new addition.
But I sort of like the idea of, like, this mystic spiritual energy in the Water Tribe.
Yeah, maybe. I could see that.
I think, how do they become one tribe if they're on separate parts of the world? Like, how do they develop without lots of technology to be one tribe, to be one culture when you're so far away?
Yeah, like, before...
That would make sense.
Before the time of Avatar, like, it seems hard for one guy to rule over both tribes considering how far they are apart, and their boats were even worse back then.
It would seem like harder now because
yeah.
It would seem harder now because like the Southern Tribe is like really like more like it's more advanced than it was like in the original series. So I just don't understand.
You're saying there's more to roll over, I guess.
Here's my question, and this is kind of pertaining a little bit to that weird tribe meeting they had in Tonrak's house. Where's Katara?
Come on, guys.
Is she dead already? I mean,
Brian in his post said he envisioned like a council like in the South. But he definitely phrased it as envisioned. So like this isn't something that's in the show. But
she's the president.
So she's the president of waterbending, and people are going to war. And what is she doing?
Is not she is going to show up and just destroy everything.
Ooh, that would be great. Yeah, I hope so.
Everyone, stop!
She's gonna like tell everybody the story of UA and stuff, and everybody's gonna be like, "Hey,
once upon a time,
maybe we shouldn't be fighting."
Unalaq says that a civil war would be good for dark spirits.
I feel like he wants that.
So this is when when you start to think. I think the way the show is resonating, it's like, oh, maybe Unalaq is trying to get this war started. So which makes you start to think, oh, maybe he sided with the spirits.
Well, we didn't see any sort of spiritual activity when the world was at war last time, so I think he's just...
That is a theory, is that, at least that the two twins are spirits, aren't real people.
Well, okay, to give away my big theory before we even get there.
What? Dude. Sam brought it up.
Dude, okay.
I said that maybe Unalaq's a spirit.
That's part of it, though.
Unalaq, I don't think it's not. Well, we'll get to that. And he says, only the Avatar can stop the war. Okay, throughout this episode, do we think Unalaq is trying to control Korra?
Yes.
Expands.
Sure.
Obviously. He's completely manipulating her. I mean, but he's doing it a bit differently than Tarlok. He's playing the family card and the you're the Avatar card.
Yeah. This really bugged me.
Yes, Jeff.
I was, when he said, like, you will be the most admired Avatar the world has ever known or something, I was like, what is this from? I was like, deja vuing all over the place. And then I remembered.
That's for a good 20 minutes.
Yeah. And then finally, I remembered Emperor Palpatine. And Anakin did the exact same thing. So,
yeah. He was like, you'll be the most powerful Jedi or the most famous Jedi world.
So that's exactly what he's doing.
I think we should praise both how Unalaq is being written and Unalaq's voice actor. I don't remember his name, but which is bad.
Praise that guy.
But he is bringing a lot of depth to this role, I feel like. I think it's easy to see Unalaq as bad, but he's also kind of sounds sincere when he's saying stuff.
Maybe he means some of it, but he doesn't mean all of it. Like, one of the things that we learned from Amon is that ends don't justify the means always. And maybe he has, like, good ends that he's trying to achieve, but his, like, path to achieving them is just so convoluted and distorted that it's no longer good. Like, the path to hell is paved with good intentions kind of deal. So, like, and he's officially paving his way.
Certainly any villain we're going to see in this, in Korra from now on, is not going to be pure evil. And in addition, you should also consider that Unalaq is certainly not going to be the big bad of the season, considering that at the end of the second episode, it's like, oh, well, he's the bad guy. Like, something's going to happen, you know? Something's
not, but, you know, according to one of my pet theories, he's not even in control. Like, he's being brainwashed by a spirit.
So, well, we will get to theories at the end. Korra intervening in conflicts started by kids. So this is the exact same thing that happens in Zuko's mom, Zuko Alone. Yeah, that episode might as well just be Zuko's mom.
Okay.
Rename Zuko, the episode title, Zuko's mom.
I mean, that's what that episode is. So Zuko Alone is the exact same thing. And it's like, oh, we're seeing this exact scene again. The problem with the scene, in my opinion, is that we don't care about any, we don't know the characters on either side of this conflict, and we don't care about them.
Yeah.
Like, the soldiers look sincere, like they're trying to do their job. They don't, you know, I don't know. But then they were going after the kids, so.
All the Water Tribe people are, like, hot, so that's a thing.
That's a
thing. Yeah, they are hot. Great. They're all quite just beautiful. They're beautiful people.
They are.
I guess that's an attribute.
Nope.
Beauty.
Did that little girl that threw a snowball at Korra, did she look like Meng a little bit?
Yeah. No.
The hair a little bit, I guess. Yeah, she had kind of pigtail things going on.
I didn't
You're the worst avatar ever.
Yeah.
I like how she just, like, stops and steams.
Was that Janna Varney? It could be.
Yeah, it could be. Like,
yelling
be
at herself.
Yeah, she's done background lines, but she's yelling at herself. She would do that.
Well, all her stuff is talking to herself because she was one of the reporters too.
Yeah, she was.
Who was asking herself questions.
Yeah. So any thoughts about that scene?
No, wait, what did she say her job title was? I make the costumes for the animated characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Where? And occasionally voice for her.
Well, how did you think Korra dealt with intervening in this conflict?
She did way better than she did last season. I mean, last season she would have quite literally roasted these people. And here, you know, she's, you know, comes in and tries to be peaceful about it and isn't going to knock heads or anything.
I guess she's realized that she can't be neutral in this. Like, you got to take a side.
Well, it's just like Aang with the war. I mean, you know, someone could have said to him, well, this war between the nations, you have to be neutral because, you know, it's about the world and it's all one people. But ultimately, you do have to pick a side or nothing's going
to
get solved.
When one person's the aggressor,
I think it was easier to pick a side with the 100-Year War because the Fire Nation was all trying to take over everybody.
Yeah, but it's the same concept.
And they were killing everybody. But anyway.
I was literally trying to set the entire Earth Kingdom on fire.
Yeah.
Not
that. Look, it didn't happen until the very end.
To be fair.
I think it's easier to pick a side in that conflict than it is with this one. But it's, you know, still, it's Korra's home, but then she's kind of being manipulated by
Unalaq. But it's still the same concept that, yes, there has to be a side picked. Like, you can't just be neutral about everything just because he's trying to play it off like, oh, you're the Avatar, you belong to the world, and, you know, you have to look at what's best for the world, and you can't pick sides in this because you're the Avatar. But you have to. And it might not be easy, or it may seem skewed, but, you know, I mean, it's got to happen one way or another.
Mm-hmm. I guess another thing I want to bring up from this is that we'll get to this more, too, in our viewer, listener feedback part, but in this episode do we see Korra acting independently? Like, I think when she's like, oh, Unalaq's like, oh, you need to be neutral in this, so she's neutral. And then at the end, she sees that her dad's not at fault, so she comes running back to her dad. Like, I feel like this is a continuation of last episode.
Yeah.
I do in that sense, too.
I guess the question is...
I would feel like he's, like, when she went after Unalaq and tried to stop them, like, it seemed...
Yeah, that's the only time when I thought maybe she's acting on her own. But still, I think she's acting based on the orders of Unalaq, you know?
Well, I think she would have done it out of the goodness of her heart anyways.
I do, too. I feel like he was feeding into her own trait. she's very easily influenced, and she doesn't realize that she's easily influenced.
Yeah, do you think? I guess that relates to what I was going to ask Nessa. Do you think, regardless of
not going
to
cause her lots of problems,
regardless of the like sexism on the creator's part about this, do you think that this is realistic for Korra's character?
Yeah, I do. Just because I think she, you know, she's in that mindset of I'm trying to be the best I can, and I'm not really sure how to do it. You know, because no one, you know, I don't think any Avatar thinks like, oh, I know exactly how to be the Avatar, like, it's fine. So, you know, she relies heavily on these people, and it's especially troublesome for her because she's been forced to rely her whole life on the same group of people because of the way they monopolized her training, whereas, you know, you've got these other Avatars who traveled around the world, kind of picking their own mentors and learning with other people and being on their own. So she doesn't have that sort of lifelong sort of training towards independence.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, like,
she has a more modern sort of life. Like, she doesn't move. She goes to school or she's sort of stuck there, you know? Like, this sounds really dumb, but it's true, you know? She is sedentary. Or, I don't know if sedentary is the best word for it, but you know what I mean?
Sure.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
It seems to me like she might be frustrated with herself. Like, I should be on the tower. I should know how to fix this, but I can't. And she doesn't know what to do. But in this situation with her uncle, like, oh, I see something going wrong. I know that it shouldn't be happening, so I'll just go stop it and hope that fixes things. You know, so that she has a clear course of action, stop the bad thing from happening.
And then you have to remember she's the Avatar coming after Aang, who was like, he was Aang.
Yeah. Tough act to follow.
Yeah, exactly.
And so is Roku.
Roku done messed up.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, back to the episode. Let's move on. We'll get back to the core thing at the end, I guess. We go back to, I guess, the major scene of the episode with the Cat and Kids. Tenzin.
Three idiots.
Kaya says Tenzin doesn't spend enough time with his kids. Aang didn't have enough time with his kids. Kaya says, "You think we have some grandiose childhood? Well, we didn't."
Interesting. That's
Kaya is just really mad.
I think Kaya projects is throwing all her anger at Tenzin because, you know, he is the closest punching bag she has to Aang, because she obviously has. I mean, I don't think she resents him because he was the favorite. I mean, that I think that's one thing we get from this episode. It's not that she's mad because he was the favorite. She's mad because she sees, you know, him as the closest thing to Aang. She says, you know, you're acting just like Dad. You're just like Dad. This is why your daughter ran away, because you're just like Dad. And Bumi even says that thing, you know, he's like, when they go away, she's like, when he walks away, and she's like, oh, typical airbender move, and he's like, you know, did Dad teach you that? So I don't think it's about him being the favorite. I think it's that she sees Aang, Tenzin and Aang, like, she's just transferring her anger there.
But why is she so mad?
So I think instead of questioning Kaya's character, like, saying, "What, Kaya, why are you such a jerk?" we should ask, why is she being written this way? I think that's maybe a more productive question to ask.
I think it's interesting considering, you know, everyone had kind of had these views about what Kaya was going to be and who she was going to be, and this is not at all, I think, what anyone could have predicted.
Yeah. I thought she was going to be like this really mellow hippie chick, but, you know, she's got a chip on her shoulder. Jeez.
She has a huge chip on her shoulder.
She's so bitter.
Why? I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, you look at it, they changed her to the middle child, which I think has a lot to do with it, because you've got, on one end, you've got Bumi, who was probably coddled a little bit over the fact that he was a non-bender, and, you know, at some point in his life, he had to have felt bad about that. I know now he acts like he doesn't, but as a child, he had to have felt bad about the fact that he had two parents who were benders, one of which was the Avatar, and he had a younger sibling, two younger siblings who were benders. So you've got that on one end, and then on, you know, you've got Tenzin, who's the baby with the added luxury of being an airbender, so now he gets all of Daddy's attention, and, you know, so where does that leave her besides, I mean, yes, she got attention from and training from Katara, but, you know, where does that sort of leave her on the scale of attention in the family?
Mm.
She's got middle child syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, they randomly made her the middle child because the entire first season of the show, we knew that she was the oldest.
Did they ever mention that in the show?
It was said that she was the oldest.
They mentioned it in the when they released those family trees.
In the show, though.
I know, but it was on Tumblr. It was like the creators, that's what we knew, was that she was the oldest child.
I mean, we'll need to fact check that, but yeah.
I have it, and I will give it to you, Dylan.
Certainly, like, there, it being released in the press thing, what that family tree is from, is different than Brian saying it on a post on Tumblr. Like, it's so from the,
it's like a retcon.
They made it.
Well, okay, it could have just been a miscommunication.
The middle child or not, the point is that she is the middle child, and this is, I think, part of the problem.
Okay.
Oh, Daddy, why did you eat my fries?
This is kind of a thought I had during this. We see, who are the humorous characters this season, of course? We see Varric is, like, light-hearted, boomy. Kaya is very serious, and Eska, while funny, is funny in a serious way. So Bolin. Bolin, I guess, is funny. So it's like
I guess.
So yeah, Bolin is lighthearted and funny too. I honestly forgot about Bolin, just like the plot does. So when do we see funny female characters in Korra? Not even funny, like lighthearted. Like all these characters being written very seriously.
I mean, Toph is kind of lighthearted. I mean, she had her serious moments.
For Korra, though.
Oh, for Korra. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have very many female characters to go off of now, do you?
Yeah, that is mm-hmm. true, but I don't think there's
maybe,
any.
Maybe, like, Iki.
I mean, Pema wasn't very serious.
Adult female characters.
Pema was not very serious at all. I mean, the whole conflict of Tenzin and Lin was between Tenzin and Lin. You know, you don't really see Pema being very dramatic about it.
I can see Pema as a valid answer to that. That's
or maybe even Korra a little bit.
Korra's just been very angsty this whole season.
Well, right now she's angsty, but, you know, once upon a time she was like, the morning is evil, and like...
Yeah. I just feel like everyone reacted negatively to Korra in the premiere, and it's like... this is because, like... let's get into this now. So, the Nostalgia Critic is caught up and did a review of Korra. The premiere. And he was like, oh, this episode's great, but you know what, Korra... I'm just going to say it. Korra's acting like a B-word. And I was like... And his brother agreed with him. And it's like, holy crap, could you be more sexist, dude?
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, no. I have a huge problem with that. Because if you look at it from what happened... I mean, she had her entire life monopolized by two men. You know, she was lied to about it. And now gets angry. And the entire fandom's like, oh...
We can defend it. We can defend it, and I agree with you, but... I think, one, calling her that word is inherently sexist. You don't
well, yeah,
say
that's
that
what
to a
they've
man.
Been saying on Tumblr as well. Yeah. I mean, they've been, it's the same argument, and it's whether they realize or not, it's a sexist way of viewing the situation.
Two, I think that you wouldn't react this way, gender reverse. Like, I don't think, Zuko in the series is brooding, and it's like, why don't you lighten up, Zuko? No one ever said Zuko's acting like a bee. They just, it's like, oh, everyone loves Zuko, it's Pauline, so interesting, but now Korra's brooding. And she's seen as horrible.
Yeah.
It would be really useful in this situation for Korra. She had a friend who was also a girl.
Mm.
Maybe also.
Wait, is there a character
privilege.
Like that?
She also lied to her most of her life. And essentially.
Is there another.
A little bit? Who is this person?
Wait, are you telling me she has a female friend?
There's another female character?
Wait.
Hold the phone.
Yeah. What
wait,
Asami?
I think she has a name.
Yeah,
she had a name.
Yeah, so Asami's not in this episode at all.
Oh my god, Asami.
It's a problem.
At least she's away from all this nonsense.
Yeah, I agree.
But, you know, it doesn't help that she is because, you know,
once
she's
again,
the best.
Ike and Brian are taking their best character from season one and just not having her. And that's not a smart move.
Interesting.
I guess we have one more scene with the king, so let's finish that then.
The
king.
First of all, Mako calls Korra sweetie.
That's nice.
Hooray. He says, do you want advice, or am I just supposed to listen?
You spelled advice wrong.
I'm aware, I just realized I realized when I tried to say advice. Do you want advice, or am I just supposed to listen? Still not clear on that.
Mako's a bad boyfriend.
I don't even know. Like, this is just boring characterization.
Yeah, I just don't care.
Yeah, I agree. Mako,
like,
just don't even care.
And there is no transition. We didn't get to see them going from, like, that, like, awkward transitional exchange. Like, okay, we're dating. Now
well,
what?
Well, it's been 6 months, just, like, they... so they're perfectly in the sink of, oh, we're dating. It's not weird.
I know.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, I just don't care.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then we see dinner with Escobar, Destinable. This, I agree, this was very abrupt transition.
Yeah, it was.
Who says do something, Avatar?
Bolin.
Bolin, yeah, I feel like that was really... It was like, oh, Bolin, you're being mean. Wow, that's like the first time Bolin's been... Like, I saw that line is not good. Agree?
Sure.
What do you mean, like, mean, well, though?
No, he was just
Bolin did that himself. He went up and talked to her.
Yeah, Bolin.
No one told him to go do that.
No, I mean, referring to her that way.
I know, but I'm saying he's that way. Yeah, I know. I'm saying it's his own fault that he got himself in this situation.
Agreed.
No, no one's core to get him out.
I'm saying this is one of the first times I've seen Bolin as unsympathetic.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That's fine, okay.
People can be that way.
Blaming, whatever.
Bolin, Bumi's search and rescue mission. He talks the but he has this yeah this monologue about that
thing
yeah
something the boss thing say he carried
back.
Some people
mm-hmm. mountain
yeah exactly and then they go down the waterfall they have this whole bending thing. I thought this was maybe a poor choice of how to execute what they're trying to accomplish here because it wasn't
Bumi.
Very it wasn't
they
very
didn't even care that Bumi fell
yeah
like
no
like
Tenzin shouted he was like Bumi so
no they
I mean,
had that was a delayed reaction as he was falling they were just sitting there like oh.
Well, they're like, oh, he's doing that again.
Oh, Bumi. You silly.
Mm. You silly.
You silly.
With the plot, everything is so forced. Like, nothing is allowed to just happen, like, naturally, you know? There's just a lot of coincidences. And coincidences to get your,
Bumi
like,
happens
people...
to suck at rock climbing.
Yeah. I mean, why would you... Like, that's the plot point that got them to the end of the episode, is that they went down the cliff.
Well, one thing that did bring up, though, is that you see for a second there, Tenzin and Kaya are laughing together at Bumi, and Bumi's like, oh, now Tenzin's the funny one. So you see that it's not just Bumi and Kaya ganging up on Tenzin. Like, they each have issues with each other individually.
God, you guys are, like, 50.
Yeah, why are you acting like teenagers?
Also, why are they... going down waterfalls when they're that old.
They're looking for Iki because they saw the footprints.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got that, but...
You're going to go down a waterfall?
I got that,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, point
that
is...
Because of the Avatar's children.
And they can.
Okay, this is the last scene we see with them.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it comes back up again because Kaya is healing him because he bumped his head and they get into that huge argument.
Okay, it goes back after the Senna meeting with Korra or no?
No, that was a really abrupt...
No, Senna meeting with Korra happens first and then it goes back.
Okay, well, let's conclude the talking about the B.
So, yeah, she's healing him and he's like, oh, thanks for the lecture, Mom. And
then they okay, get I guess now that we've had more time to think of it, have you developed your thoughts on this, Mel?
In a way, I do. I mean, it's... I'm trying to think if I like it just because I like seeing cloud babies or... You know, because I like seeing, you know, a part of the reason I was really excited about this episode because I wanted to see scenes with them because it seemed like they were going to have more of a presence in this than they did in the last two episodes, which they did. And I don't react as much as people have about the Aang situation because I kind of guessed it was going to happen, you know? So, I mean, I like it. I think some of it's kind of weird. Like, some of it, the way they're trying to force some of these plots to the surface is kind of not that well done. But I think I care about it way more than I care about Unalaq and his situation.
Mm-hmm. Sam?
What about it?
Any more opinions on just the Cat and Kids and what they do with them in this episode?
Well, they're people, I guess. I don't know. That's not what I wanted to say! Jeez.
Yes.
I don't know. I just feel like they're people. They have issues. I don't understand why they're having this whole our childhood sucked thing now in the middle of this. Like, why couldn't they discuss this earlier in their lives? And it does feel like it's forced.
Okay.
It does feel like... What about Iki, guys? Like, what about her?
Yeah.
Come on, you poop faces.
Jeff, any more thoughts on this?
Nope.
Britt?
I think we summed everything up. I do like how everyone is flawed nicely. I just wish that some of the flaws that they have made more sense with their
more
personalities.
Organic.
More organic flaws, you know, rather than this is a flaw. Yeah.
Look at it.
Mm.
I want all of you to look at it.
I think that's a good point, though. Like, I guess if before Korra started, if I was going to think of them presenting Aang Katara's kids, I would have thought they would have just been these Mary Sue characters. Instead, they're going the opposite
perfect
route.
Children.
Yeah, they're just going the opposite route and making them very
I guess
flawed
that's good.
People. I think
what
it's
if Aang and Katara had a terrible marriage or something?
Oh, no,
what if
don't
they were fighting the whole
that.
Time?
Don't even. Okay, you guys are done, okay?
Kaya's
Katara was showing when she dumped that water on the Boomy. And she's like, fine, heal yourself or whatever she said.
Yeah,
I was
like that.
Ooh, girl,
yeah.
Also, Boomy looks a lot like Sokka.
Yeah.
I guess my reaction to all of this still is just why is this the focus of it? I'm not really, it's still not attached to the Kaya and Tenzin, Kaya and Boomy, but also still to Tenzin either.
It also hurts me to know that Aang dying was awful enough for Katara that Kaya had to move down to the South Pole.
Yeah. Did I miss that? I feel like I put that in there.
Yeah, you
put that in there. That's why I'm bringing it up, because you missed talking about it.
Did I just skip over it?
Yeah, you did. Point is, Kaya moved down to the South Pole to be with Katara after Aang died. Because she was all alone.
By
herself.
Okay,
did you think I was just making that up because
no,
it happened?
I didn't scroll down more. There's more for me to read about. Okay, yeah, we get back to this again. Senna and Korra, all I ever wanted to be was the Avatar, says Korra. I guess we see Senna talk, which is good. The problem I have with this is that she just says general motherly stuff the entire time. And it's like,
yeah.
I don't... She's not a divine...
We are proud of you.
She's not a
I
divine
I like her
character.
Voice.
Her voice is cool, but I don't think what she's saying is cool.
Also, she's
some of what
she's
she said was some of the most interesting stuff.
Like what?
When she's talking about how some of the stuff that's going on is not stuff that's in her control. Like, no one has told... Korra, there is some stuff that you just can't do something about because it's not within your, like, control. Like, you can't fix everything, and everyone has told her
she's supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah,
I mean,
but you
her job.
Don't.
She's not a normal person.
Well, no, but you, like, you, she... Korra is at most 17 years old right now.
She could be dealing with
large-handed political situations at 17 that are older than your birth is difficult, and you can't fix them in a day, and everyone is expecting her to fix them much faster than
it's going to happen. Of course they are. She's the Avatar. I mean, that's her. I mean, I think it's still the problem is that she followed Aang. I mean, this is someone who mastered the elements in the span of a year, and at the age of 12... fought a fully grown man and defeated him, and it seems so epic and awesome, and you just expect every Avatar to be able to do everything with a snap of the fingers, and it doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
No. I totally agree with Britt. Like, I think that's really good advice.
I agree. I still think it was all just supportive mother, and it's like, I want to see some depth.
Moms are cool. So.
I agree, but...
Can't be a supportive mother and be depth?
I don't know.
Like,
I think she
should have more depth, though.
Sure. Well, maybe we'll get it eventually. I doubt it, though.
Korra is clearly a daddy's girl, too, so...
Well, it seems like it, yeah.
Yeah.
Rebellion scene, of course, we talked about this before, but she discovers...
There's fighting and stuff.
Yeah, there's fighting. I don't remember there being too much slow motion stuff in the original.
It was just when she was swinging that guy.
There's two stuff. There's when she was, there's also her putting rope or something. There's two of them.
Totally broke that guy's arm.
This is very M. Night Shyamalan-y in terms of...
Well, this is another scene where I said that you can see the growth here because, you know, had it been last season, she would have kicked these guys' butts. And here, she didn't even really fight back. She was just defending herself.
Well, it's also her tribe. I think that's relevant.
Yeah.
And she also thought it was her father.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Dad.
Daddy, why'd you eat my fries?
Yeah, relevant. Any thoughts on this fight scene, Jeff?
It was well executed, although I didn't like the build up very much.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just like stroll on in, and they're off with the thing.
It was very fast. Yeah,
seemed pretty familiar, like to the stuff with Tarlok, where she walks in the dead of night into the thing and finds it finds confronting things. I don't know. Reminded me.
It was Stan trial. So Korra convinces them to stand trial. I don't know why they don't have that in their clause already. It seems like Korra would be unfamiliar with that concept unless it was already executed in society. I guess they have trials in Republic City.
Yeah. They had the whole Yakun trial. Well, she kind of saw that.
Did she see that?
She saw it through Aang.
Yeah.
Aang showed it to her.
A little bit, yeah. Okay. I feel like it's like, I feel like it wasn't treated as a revolutionary concept. Like, Unalaq's, okay, we can do that.
I'm assuming they have them already.
Yeah, so like, maybe they have them already, they're just not universally deployed, I don't know.
Or he was going to shun them away, you know?
This isn't a democracy.
They were caught in the act.
Kaya,
it's possible that he was just like being impatient, like, I want to get on with my big plan, but I've got these things, and people have to throw him in jail.
Yeah, so
and then Korra's like, no, do the trial, and he's like, okay, I'll appease you to get you on my side.
Yeah.
So I can split you later.
In that case, Korra should have been like, you should follow the law. That I feel like that would have been more appropriate reaction. It didn't seem like it was the law. It seemed like Korra's suggesting something outside of it.
Outside the law.
Yeah, exactly.
But then she says, like, everyone has a right to it.
Yeah, which is really weird. I just, I don't know if that line makes sense in the Avatar.
It makes sense maybe, in America. Damn.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Like she's been influenced by Republic City culture. It's like, and now it feels like it's a right. Everyone should have a trial.
Yeah, I guess that's what that was supposed to be. I think it was just
even though it's not the case actually.
Yeah.
Well, the difference is also too. This is a monarchy versus a sort of council system as well, where he could basically say throw them in jail and it would be done, and no one would do anything about it. But now she's like, well, give them a trial. Like, let's so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this newfangled concept. Okay, fine.
Yeah, he didn't even say that though. But yeah. It was just very weirdly executed, I'd say. Kaya moved. So we talked about it. Kaya moved to be with Katara after Aang died.
Ouch.
I hope they expand on that. Tenzin says she was finding herself going on the world previously.
She was a hippie singing Secret Tunnel.
Yeah. We're Aang's.
She ran away from home like Ikki did.
That's true. We're Aang's kids, too, says Bumi, I think. Who else is going through the savior of dad's legacy? Tenzin asks. Bumi and Kaya say, how about us? Which is interesting. Like, I feel like that's significant.
So Tenzin may look the most like Aang and be the airbender, but they are just as much part air nomad as he is. I mean, they do have a point there, where they could easily have been taught the culture like the air acolytes and passed it on, but they obviously were not.
Mm.
Like, Kai is obviously adopted water tribe custom. She wears blue, she does all the stuff. And then Bumi, which is funny, he wears red most of the time, or green, you know, like two cultures that are not his specifically, you know, like he's adopted other ones, sort of.
Yeah.
And I just come from living in Republic City where it's more of a melting pot, but he's not really with either one of his parents. Strongly.
Yeah, I agree with those two. They could have easily passed on the legacy just as much as Tenzin could.
It's kind of late now.
I guess the thing would be interesting to see how this is implemented later. Like, how will they be involved now? If they are involved. Korra and Tanrak make up. Glad that they don't do a, oh, I'm sorry, Daddy. But at the same time, it kind of is that. She doesn't say, I'm sorry.
She's just really happy that he didn't do the thing.
Yeah, she's like, I'm so glad you weren't involved, but then she does apologize, which I'm a little upset about. Like, I don't want her to apologize. I don't think she has to apologize.
Yeah. Agreed.
I guess. But that scene wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. That's the best thing I can say. And then have the whole cliffhanger when it's like, arrest them for doing something they didn't do. Dun-dun-dun.
He knows he didn't do it, though, too, because he was conscious when she said, oh, you're not my dad, and the guy said, no, your dad wouldn't help us.
Yeah.
So, Unalaq, you're so...
He's being nefarious on purpose.
Yes, and...
He's being the evil stepmother.
This is a cliffhanger for the sake of having a cliffhanger.
Yep. Oh, it's a two-part episode, so...
Yeah, gotta happen, yeah.
It's kind of... It's not surprising.
Anything we didn't mention, we can come back later, but for now, we're going to go into grading the episode.
Sure.
Okay, let's go ahead. So, if you missed last week, the new grading scale is out of 10. 10 is a best episode of television ever. 5 is an average episode of television.
That's not fair, because I don't watch that much TV.
Well, okay. I'm sorry.
You've watched TV before, Sam.
You watched Adventure Time, like, you know stuff. Okay, Mel. How would you grade this episode out of 10 and why?
Somewhere between, if 5's the average, then somewhere between a 6 or 7, I guess. Just because there were parts of it that I did think were really well done, and it was like, oh, that's interesting, I didn't think you'd go that way. And there were some parts that were like, oh, why did you do that? So there's a pretty good mix of pros and cons, so.
Jeff?
I would be very much in line with Mel's thoughts on this and would say a 6.5 on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to bother trying to be, you know, consistent across weeks because I know I rated the first episode higher. That's just how I felt at the time. So.
Okay. Sam?
It really sucks that I can't do an I don't care out of 10 because I really don't.
Well, you can't, so, you know. Just give me a number.
Maybe like a 6.5. I feel it was a little better than average. Like I liked all the Cloud Babies. I like seeing them and having them interact. Obviously, I didn't like their interaction specifically too much. That was probably the most interesting part of the episode. I would give it a 6.5 because of reasons.
Okay, I think reasons are valid. Britt, what would you give it?
I would give it a 5.5 max. 5.3 lowest point.
Wow,
cool. It was really, really average.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
with a p-value of 0.5.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Statistics joke, yay. I'm gonna give this like a 5.5, mostly just because of how deflating it was. Like I said earlier, I'm just so unenthusiastic about a lot of stuff that happened, and in fact, a lot of it made me counteracted previous enthusiasm. I don't know if it was worse than the first two episodes, but I certainly reacted to it worse.
Okay.
I thought it was better than the first two episodes, but okay. I didn't.
Oh, like, it should be noted that you all, I'm putting up polls on the DF main site. You can rank the episodes along with us. Please do that for this one. You all were very across the board for the first episode, Rebel Spirit. 7, 8, 10, 6, and 9 pretty much all got the same number of votes, and some of you even rated 5 and less than 5. The second episode, I think you guys were more positive on. 30% gave it a 10 out of 10, which is just not realistic, but people always give episodes 10 out of 10s. And fewer gave it, none of you, two people gave it less than 5, but none of you gave it 5. So, seemingly you guys like the second episode more. You can rate this episode too. So now, for you, the listeners of the From the Spirit World podcast, exclusively, but not really, you can get a free audiobook download and a free 14-day trial for audible.com. You can go to audibletrial.com/FTSW. This is actually a free trial. You actually get a free audiobook download. You have to give them like a credit card or a PayPal though, and if you want it to stay free, you'd have to cancel it after 14 days, and that's really it. It actually is free, and it does support the podcast, so that'd be great if you could do this. Britt has a recommendation for you this week. Britt, what is your recommendation?
I recommend The Maze Runner by Dame Dasher. It is a group that's making a new movie, which you've probably heard about. It's going to have Dylan O'Brien in it, and it is about a group of boys who get sent to this place, but you're not really sure what it is, and all their memories are wiped, and there's a maze that they have to solve to get out. And I would describe it as, like, The Hunger Games meets Lord of the Flies meets The Hobbit. It's really interesting and really fun, and I really enjoy it, and James Dasher is evil, and you will cry.
Oh, that's great. Crying's always good.
In a good way. You'll be happy. You'll be excited as you cry.
Cool.
No, you won't.
Yeah, so check out the Maze Runner on Audible. Okay, so now, what I want to do somewhat briefly is get into me and Jeff's theories, and we'll expound upon these. I don't know if that's the correct usage of that word, in future podcasts. But for now, Jeff, you have a theory about what will happen this season.
Sort of.
Yes. Tell us what it is.
Okay. So, okay, so here's the premise, and it might be not accurate, but here it is. Okay, the premise is, have we seen Korra do anything with her avatar state that Aang could not have done by himself? So, like, she's done some bending and such with the glowy eyes, but none of it was really all that impressive.
In fact, she gets beaten by the spirit in episode 1.
Yeah. Now, like, we're leaving aside the whole restoring bending thing temporarily, because it doesn't really fit yet. But so yeah, it's possible that when Aang gave her avatar state, he actually sort of short-circuited it and is like manifesting his own power through her whenever she uses it, because he didn't have time to, you know, or well, the world didn't have time for Korra to get all her like cosmic energy in place to get the full avatar state. and he possibly felt responsible for how the world was because he sort of created this this Yakone situation. So he feels responsible. He gives her the power to save the day, and the price of that is that he has to step in himself whenever Korra uses the Avatar State, and it's not nearly as powerful as Aang would be with the full Avatar State. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. There's possibly some flaws in it, but that's the theory.
So basically, Korra is just getting Aang's power. Which I think is super interesting. I also think that fits exactly with what we've seen.
This whole theory, I've been trying to think more analytically ever since I started watching Shingeki no Kyojin, Attack on Titan, because they do this all the time. But little things, little hints around, and then you think it's just a plot hole, but it's not.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, so my reaction to Korra using the Avatar State so liberally in the premiere is, oh, here's Mike and Brian again, ignoring the Avatar State making sense. But if this is, if Jeff's theory is true, we are going to call this Jeff Theory the number two, or part two, or the second. And it's the
2.0.
Official, it's the 2.0, it's the official title. And if this is true, then actually what would we'd be seeing in the premiere would make perfect sense. Korra's underpowered Avatar State that she can use liberally. How did she master it? Oh, well, she didn't master it. She just mastered Aang in the Avatar State, and Aang somehow, stepping in to help out Korra. And also, I think that this makes sense, given Mike and Brian's reaction. I don't remember where they said this, but they were asked if Aang would be in this season. Mike said no, and then Brian was like, yes, he'll be there, I think. What did Brian say?
He'll be around.
No, I think Mike said he'll be around. I think Mike,
yeah, that's right, he said that.
Was this just at the book signing?
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so Brian wasn't even there, right?
No, yeah, you're right, it was Mike.
Yeah, so it was just Mike, so he's like, oh, so Mike officially said no, and then he later, and then later he said, he retracted that and said, no, he'll be around. So I think the way this would make sense is if Mike is being nefarious here, and this is actually Aang's a significant plot point later in the season, which also makes sense with why are they bringing Aang up and Aang's relationship with Kaya and Bumi in this episode. So Aang's just going to be a plot twist later. Then they don't want to reveal
him
it.
In mind.
If what?
So they're keeping him in mind.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, definitely. I'm right now fully believing this, and I want, mostly because I want to, because I feel like this would be super good, a super good plot development, and be really interesting.
Yeah, we shall see.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens next episode, and we'll track this throughout the season. My theory, which I've said before on the podcast, is that Desna and Eska are spirits, specifically that they are Chui and La, somehow being controlled by Unalaq. I'm not saying Unalaq's a spirit, just that they are spirits. Maybe they're controlling him. My status right now on this theory is that I don't believe it. I don't think they're a Chui and La.
You don't believe your own theory?
Yes, I think it's a possibility, but I don't. Based on what we've seen so far, I don't think it's true.
I could buy it if they were some other spirits.
Yeah, I think maybe them spirits in general. Maybe it's hard to see them being controlling figures from the. What they've done so far, I feel like that'd be a stretch of a twist. It's like, oh, they were the ones controlling things the whole time.
Maybe they're not actually
so
in a controlled state.
Maybe they're just random spirits.
We'll surprise you.
Unalaq's giving them human form, and they're just playing around being humans.
I guess I don't know why that would be necessary though.
Or it's like UA, and when the life went into them or something.
Maybe
they got some dark spirit in them instead of the moon spirit or whatever. Or they have the ocean spirit inside of them.
Yeah, something like that, just partly. Yeah. Anyway, we shall see. We'll see about other theories from you guys throughout the rest of the season, but for now, that's what we're all going to do. You can send us your theories. One of the ways you can do it is by voicemail. On the right side of the podcast page, there's a thing that pops up where you can send a voicemail. We have a voicemail to play for you right now from Felicity. I hope this works. I'm going to be... Basically, what I'm doing is I'm holding my earbud up to my microphone on my thing. It worked when I tested it, so let's hope this works.
Hey, my name is Felicity. First, I'd like to say that your podcasts are amazing and very in-depth in a way that I can definitely appreciate, especially with a show of this kind of caliber. I've been listening to From the Spirit World since mid-season 2 of the original series, so I'm a long-time follower of yours. I actually have two questions, one of which is more of like a suggestion or a request. I would like to hear more of your opinions on the adult themes that you think are touched upon in Korra, particularly the points on feminism and homophobia you brought up in the most recent podcast. If you can't say them explicitly, I think a lot of listeners would appreciate listening to an 18 and up mini podcast dedicated to a lot of these topics. Also, what is your opinion on Jenora going to the spirit world? Do you think that Aang was calling her in the statue room, and why do you think Tenzin of all people hasn't made such a connection? And lastly, do you think that Jenora, obviously being a human being who is not the Avatar that can enter the spirit world, could possibly lead into the previously mentioned trip into the spirit world that Uncle Iroh made before the start of the first series?
Yeah, thank you so much, Felicity, for your voicemail. You've written in before via email, and you're awesome. Several things to hit on there. That was a lot of stuff. First of all, I would say that I don't think that the sex and homophobia discussion is 18 and up. In fact, I think we discussed it pretty openly last podcast. The only thing was the tentacle stuff, which I didn't want to mention explicitly, which I don't think is terribly relevant anyway. What's my our opinions on it? I'm frustrated by it. I don't think it was as bad this episode, although Korra was still being, as I voiced before, although Jeff thought she was acting of her own volition in that scene, and I may agree with it. She's still being necessarily going between two men, telling her what to do. There's no really homophobic stuff this episode, which is good. And yeah, Mel, any new thoughts on this?
I mean, like you said, it really wasn't touched upon too much. So, I mean, my opinion is still the same as it was, that it is a problem. It wasn't as much of a problem this week, but it's, you know, just general plot stuff. And part of the way they're portraying Korra and the way the fandom therefore reacts to Korra is not that great.
Yeah, I also think I think it's a two-part problem. One, the portrayal is maybe rooted in sexism, although it's not overt sexism. And two, I think some of the reactions, although I'm not saying you're not allowed to not like how Korra acted, I'm just saying like some of the specific reactions, like the nostalgia critic, were sexist, which is bad. Jenora into the spirit.
Fan reaction doesn't show intention. You can't really
blame
the show for how people react.
Mm-hmm. Jenora into the spirit world, definitely looking forward to it. I think the second part was, do you think it could be related to Iroh into the spirit world?
They're not smart enough to bring that back up.
Yeah, well, it's not really, I've mentioned this before, but that was an Aaron Ehaus plotline, and then he's not on the show right now, so I doubt they would bring that back up.
Though I wish they would.
I wish they would.
They're not going to.
I think
for the first half, like, whether, like, why Tenzin didn't make the spiritual connection, I think it's because he's way too attached to this world. Like, he's really invested in, like, maintaining.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, being part of the councils and, you know, mm-hmm. busying himself and not even caring for his family, and so he's just really tied to this world.
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, thank you, Felicity, for sending in the voicemail. You too can send in voicemails. Click on the thing on the podcast page. Cordy,
I can't send in anymore.
Sam just sends me off. Okay, so there's a limit to 20 voicemails I get per month. So it's possible if people actually start sending in more, I might have to be like, okay, well, this might not work. But yeah, so I'm probably going to get it. Courtney emailed us saying, I was wondering what you think about the first Avatar being male, because before Korra, I always thought the first Avatar would be female because the Avatar is the spirit of the world and it is called Mother Earth / Nature. What do you all think? So yes, thank you for it, and Courtney, we did discuss this like a few podcasts ago, but I am frustrated by this because I don't know just why. It seems like symbolism-wise, the first Avatar be female. I don't think it really matters, but it's like it's just another big role going to a male in Korra.
Does the whole like Mother Earth Nature female identity carry into Buddhism?
Yeah. So actually, interestingly, I was talking about this today in class, or yesterday. In the myth of Tibet, of Tibet's creation, or the bringing of Buddhism to Tibet, the earth is like a demoness, and she's like tamed by temples being built on her, and like the Buddhism is kind of like taming Tibet. It's like Tibetan lands, and the people are originally like wild, kind of. So it's the earth is seen as female, at least in Tibet. Tibet does not certainly represent Buddhism across the world, but it is there. Which is so it would make more sense, I think, if the first avatar is female.
Agreed.
It's not a super important thing, but it's just on top of other stuff. So yeah. We are at 90 minutes. Cool. That's it. We will save topics for like, what did you think of the animation, and are you hopeful for the rest of the season? Although this is not an inspiring start. I don't think it has been awful, but not that amazing. We'll save these discussing more in depth later. Thank you for listening, guys. I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Mel, Sam, Jeff, and Britt. Produce and edit the podcast is created by me and AJ. Technical directors are AJ, Kevin, and Jeff. Musical credits go to the Ishida brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, and Luke Tripp. The logo and banner are by Kevin. And Don Wufeng is owned by Jake. Cool.
That's nice.
That's nice.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting the podcast. You can donate by going to dongwufeng.net/podcast and clicking on donate at the top.
That's how, Sam.
Yay. That is how you do it. How does it go to like supporting the podcast?
Because it gives expensive. It gives us money. Yeah. Support generally means money. Honestly, like that's what I mean by supporting the podcast. The subscriptions go to,
or emotional support with iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and you can review us on iTunes. No one reviewed us after last week.
Yeah, ouch. I was like looking. I was like,
give some good stars, guys. Thank you. Never mind. So you can find out about who we are more. Podcast bios on the podcast page, email, Tumblr, and Twitter, and send us voicemail. Any last thoughts on this episode or anything?
I just
three idiots. Yeah, I guess so.
Idiots.
I don't care like that,
but if you want to have every single character who's being super right now.
What?
I barely got into that. Okay. Britt will work on your microphone for next time. I know, it's sad. Next week, Civil Wars Part 2. We'll be back again before midnight on Fridays. Thanks for listening, guys. What do you want to end on?
Icy Bliss.
I like that. Know. That's a good one.
Icy Bliss.
Oh, wait.
What?
Can we share what happened to Mel today?
No, we can't. No. Oh, yeah. Well, what was that? Okay, not what she's about.
No, not that.
Mel got accepted into Disney College program.
I did.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yay.
To Mel.
Thunderous applause.
Yay. Thanks. Boy, that escalated quickly, yes. Anyway. So, yeah, thanks for listening, guys. One, two, three.
Icy Bliss.
Goodbye.
That's what we're saying.